Welcome to the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay Community Services District. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Will you all rise with me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele.
Here.
Vice President Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Tato.
Here.
All right, thank you. At this time, I'd like to begin public comments. Individual public comments will be limited to a 3-minute time limit. During the public comments, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up to speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. So at this time, if anybody would like to step up to the podium for comment. Okay. All right, well, we'll close public comment. At this time, I'd like to turn this over to our supervisor.
As supervisor, or should I say Chair Pipo, comes to the podium, in our workshop back in, I believe it was late January, early February, the board had requested Mary's presence at the board at a future board meeting to present issues on some of the advocacies that she's been working on relative to the Delta Reservation and some of the issues regarding water diversion issues as well. And so we will work with her staff on that. Thank you, Mary and Karen, for that. And
thank you, Mr. Howard, and we're going to load up our presentation. But again, I am Mary Pifo, a resident of Discovery Bay and a member of the Board of Supervisors here in Contra Costa County, and currently serve as chair of the board. Some of you know Karen. Many of you know Karen Cornell, my East County field rep, but she's with me today. And you do see her regularly at your meetings to provide reports from my office to all of you and to hear concerns from all of you that I can take back to the Board of Supervisors in the county to make sure that we are accountable and responsive to the community and its needs. But Rick, as you said, you've asked me here tonight to talk specifically about my ongoing advocacy in regards to our Delta. A lot of very, very important and urgent things are going on, and I believe you have already acted on the Contra Costa Delta Resolution and supported that, which I greatly appreciate. We were tasked essentially by Congressman Miller to come out into our local communities and get local stakeholder involvement in this major, major political drama related to our beautiful and fragile Delta environment that we know as our backyard. San Joaquin County has taken a very aggressive effort. It's a very comprehensive one, but their stakeholder group, they have called themselves the Delta Coalition, which I have a little bit of a political struggle with because we have created the 5 Delta County Coalition, and there's a little bit of a transition in naming and identity that I think the counties are suffering a little bit from. But nonetheless, the stakeholder groups are growing, and your involvement in the Contra Costa County Delta Stakeholder Group is very, very important and valuable. So what is the Delta? It's part of our advocacy of where we begin. This is the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta as it has been legally defined in the original Delta Reform Act passed in, I believe, the late 70s. I'm not quite sure on the exact date. I should know, but I don't off the top of my head. But this is what was created under the Delta Reform Act. You see the primary zone in the center with a strong, solid line, and then the secondary zone, which most of the communities, like Discovery Bay through Pittsburgh, are in. And really what this zone indicates is restrictions on land use and restrictions on construction at the local level. Each of the 5 Delta counties that are listed there, we are and have created the Delta County Coalition, but Yolo, Solano, Sacramento, San Joaquin, and Contra Costa County, we have adopted this Delta Reform Act primary and secondary zones into our county's general plans and implemented it. So what you see here are restrictions in local land use that we've adopted and implemented since the initial implementation of the Delta Reform Act. How we track issues is a lot of local input, as an example would be from the Discovery-based CSD, and we have advocated and created policy at the local level at the request of the local community. But we also participate in regional forums, and again, we have created the Five Delta County Coalition out of the efforts of the Delta Protection Commission. I currently serve on the Delta Protection Commission and also as chair of the Delta Conservancy, and we monitor Delta water-related issues at the local level, the state, and the federal level. It is significant work, it's intensive, and there are a lot of moving parts occurring at all times. There are some good things happening in the Delta. For those of you who are maybe younger than me, can read that small font. That's a little hard from here. But you may remember most recently the striped bass effort from the California Department of Fish and Game. There was an effort to indicate the striped bass as a non-native species and take some significant efforts that would affect a lot of our advocacy on the Delta that we have been making at the local level. We did not only keep the striped bass from being named a non-native or an invasive species, but actually through a local resident, Jim Kellogg, who serves on the commission, he actually made a motion that was approved that the striped bass be considered a native species, even though it's not. So we got a home run on that one, and we certainly need to give credit and recognition where it's deserved. We have a lot of effort moving forward on levee repairs, something very important not only to our community, but to the stability of the Delta as a whole, and something that's been lost in the BDCP and the bigger Delta dialogue that I'll go into more in a little bit later. But we have existing state funds that have been approved through bond measures by the statewide voters, and they're not being used for levee rehabilitation and or restoration, something that is very important to us, again, locally. We're working on Senate bills to preserve and protect the levee subvention program, and then we have the Delta Reform Act of 2009, which is an amendment or an update to the original Delta Reform Act. It's known that it was created under extraordinary special session of the Senate. Therefore, its legislation is identified as SBX71. The locals, we advocated very fiercely for co-equal goals. SBX71 is pretty much cloaked as a water grab, if you'll pardon my directness on that, but it is. And I'll get into a little more detail later on. But out of the water grab, those of us were very strongly advocating for representation of the Delta itself, no matter what was going to happen. And out of that, we got the co-equal goals that not only met a reliable water supply for the state, which is the water grab part, but also restoring the Delta ecosystem and reducing reliance on the Delta. And we refer to it as many considering the Delta a simple plumbing fixture, which we know it is much more than that. SBX71 also created two new agencies, the Delta Stewardship Council and the Delta Conservancy. Again, I currently serve as chair of the Delta Conservancy, made up of local members of the five Delta counties, and a couple state departments are represented on the Conservancy. The Delta Stewardship Council is the body creating the Delta Plan, and the Delta Plan is part of the water grab and how the BDCP and the Delta Stewardship Council are working together in that effort. And again, I will come back to that a little more comprehensively in a moment. In the legislation, there was also a clarification that no new water conveyance system can be built until those who want it have legally committed to paying for it and mitigating all the impacts it will have in the Bay Delta system. Now, this sounds really positive, but it actually is really dangerous because it's a good foot in the door, but those that want the water are very clear about saying they have the ability to pay for it, even though their customers are not necessarily capable of paying for it. The contractors themselves are saying they can. So it's a foot in the door. It looks like good preservation language, but it is very much a significant threat in the planning process. So more good things that are happening. We're studying the Delta's economy through the Delta Protection Commission, which through the Economic Sustainability Report, indicating how much the Delta's economy is valued on agriculture, recreation, And that as these folks look at the Delta again as a plumbing fixture, what that impact will be on us in the Delta, the five Delta counties, not just the primary and secondary zone, but the surrounding areas and community. What impact will that have on our economies, our way of life, our quality of life, in addition to potential ecosystem impacts and degradation? We are also working on the Two Gates project. We pretty much have it off the table at this point. It's very much a program or a project that folks south of the Delta like because it helps create some different flows and access to water exports that help them in their pumping timing. But for us locally, it's very, very dangerous and a big threat. We kind of have it off the table, but it's there. It's lurking around a little bit, and want to make sure that, as I say, it's kind of off the table. We don't get too comfortable that it's not going to rear its head at some point. We've been working with Assemblymember Joan Buchanan. She has introduced AB 1540 to provide state funding for eradication of South American sponge plant. This is an increasing invasive weed species that we will be seeing growing impacts from. We did find it in the local waterways when we were doing the water hyacinth and Agaria densa treatment last year. It is a precursor, if you will. You can imagine where water hyacinth and Agaria densa were a couple of years ago. Sponge plant is on its way to growing as rapidly and have as significant an impact. Good news is on Delta advocacy, our congressional representatives are very fiercely in our corner. Congressman Miller and his term in Congress is decades old. So he has significant weight, if you will, politically in D.C. The power structure of the parties is in favor of the Republicans right now in Congress. So the party strength is not there right now for Congressman Miller and our delegation, but the policy strength is. He and Congressman McNerney, Congressman Garamendi, now Congressman Thompson and Congresswoman Matsui have developed a Delta coalition themselves in Congress, and they've been fiercely advocating on these very, very important issues and really helping us in our message of the fragility and the importance of the Delta and those of us at the local level, no matter what the future of the Delta is. Senator Boxer and Feinstein have been working with us as well. There are some political realities there that we navigate, but they both have been very good ears for us and listening intently. And we do have Senator Feinstein right now seeking some important questions, confirming parts of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan efforts and what it means in its programming. Talked a little bit about the treatment of aquatic weeds. We had a significant success last year. Unfortunately, the problem began about 2009, and there was not a lot of effort or engagement at the state level. And I had the opportunity to be on a bus tour through the Delta with my colleagues, and we did a stop at the export pumps, just, I guess, east of the airport. And the Department of Water Resources staff coincidentally indicated that they'd had to shut their pumps down because of the weed impacts that they were clogging up the pumps. And he was talking about it being a negative thing. You know, and I didn't care if they were shutting down the pumps. That was a good thing. But the buzzer went off in my head that these weeds are not only affecting us as a local community, but also affecting the export pumps and the state water project, as well as the federal water project. So that gave me an incentive and opportunity to get the state and the federal folks in a room with our local folks to talk about the problem at a Delta-wide level, not just a local Bethel Island or Discovery Bay issue. And we had some success. We got the Department of Boating and Waterways in, who really, really listened carefully, closely, worked very closely with us at the county level, many of you here in the community, and came up with some funding and treatment plan to do on Agaria densa. They have an ongoing treatment plan on water hyacinth. It was the Agaria densa that was the challenge, but they came out, did some test product application, and over the course of the treatment period, really, really had some great success. This is a local resident that provided the pictures you see here, and these are sort of a time lapse, and I know they're kind of hard to see, at least from my distance here, but the time lapse between the upper left-hand corner of where it was on April 15th of 2011, I guess, I think my year was off, 2011, and the weeds straight down and then a shot across his bay. And down in the bottom right-hand corner, essentially the same view in that bottom, let's see, third picture across in the profile of the same palm tree with pretty much, let's see, that's three months later, July 14th, where the waterway was clear. So DBW was fabulous in coming out. They went to the mat for us as a local community perspective with Bethel Island, came out and did the treatment. We had different impacts in Bethel Island than we did in Discovery Bay, unfortunately, because the treatment in Discovery Bay was much more successful. But we do have a meeting coming up with the local stakeholder group again to talk about 2012, what we can do, what our expectations can and should be, and how we can continue the treatment application, hopefully, because as we have learned from 2010 to 2011, if you don't get on it right away, it's only going to grow. This is just a quick slide on the state and federal water project map. This is essentially where we get our water from and where it goes. It identifies, in my opinion, the need for comprehensive water planning, which is what's not going on. So here's really what the crux of the problem is. The Bay Delta Conservation Plan, again, the acronym is BDCP, is cloaked as a conservation plan. What it is a 50-year permit for the state water contractors to come in and say they're going to approve the Delta and mitigate for impacts. Well, they build a pipeline that they're currently studying the only alternative at 15,000 cubic foot per second. To give you some idea of what that means in capacity, it's about the current flow through the Sacramento River today. So if they had access to that and the pumps were on, we would have a muddy Sacramento River. We know that they've had the pumps on. We had significant species impact a couple years ago that the court shut down. So we know when they have their finger on the trigger, they're going to turn it on when they want and suffer the consequences later. So if they have a capacity to do that at this magnitude, it essentially will destroy and devastate not only our community, but many along the Delta. The effort is led not only by the water contractors, but the state and federal agencies are involved. The Delta County Coalition continues to seek a seat at the table. They don't want us there because we're too logical and introspective in the impacts, but we will continue to try to, and again, that's where you and your advocacy helps us communicate and convey the message of importance. More bad stuff. There are not full alternatives being explored through BDCP. They're looking at intakes at the northern part of the Delta. They're not looking at the southern part of the Delta or possibly western Delta intakes, which would be around the Antioch area. There's a couple plans that consider the western Delta intakes as being less impactful on species, and you would address salinity impacts in the X2 line if you're looking at western Delta intakes. But again, the BDCP process is not looking at western Delta alignments simply because they want fresh water at the highest source available in the Delta, and they want it now. What the project looks like, and these are the proposed tunnels. 5 intake facilities just south of Sacramento. Those are just the intake facilities, and I have a picture of what one looks like coming up. In addition, there are 2 large water storage facilities that would be designed and built with this. One in the north end, I wish I had a pointer, but it says right underlined underneath Sacramento County. Oh, there you go, Rick.
It doesn't show up on the TV.
Oh, you're right. You told me that. Anyway, the bright blue dot there in almost the center of the page, a little bit towards the top, 1,200-acre forebay would be dig and dug with a 32 to 35-foot levee perimeter around it. Now, this is down there. We all know driving up and down Highway 5, there's not a lot of elevation over there to hide such a structure from the view, let alone the impact on the local communities. In addition, at the south end, there's a blue dot down at the south end that is a 900-acre forebay. Again, 32 to 35-foot levee perimeter around it. The 5 intake pumps will look like they'll be built, excavated with this fabulous tool. You can see there's a little picture of a figure there by those large turbines, if you will. 38-foot wide tunnel boring machine, and you see it in comparison to the figure. And you can understand the impact of this tunneling underneath that. And there we are at the south end of that picture. Little old Discovery Bay. It drives right through Victoria, the Victoria Island, the Twin Sloughs over in that area. So these are the risks that we're facing and why we've been so busy. This is the Delta we know and love. Bucolic, pastoral, colorful, quiet, serene. And this is a tunnel intake facility. Again, five of them just south of Sacramento. Each is about the size of an NFL football stadium. Picture in your mind what that's going to look like. And then in addition, the 1,200-acre forebay at the north end and 900 at the south.
Mary, can we
sure,
ask a question? I'm sorry, I don't want to.
That's right.
Those mostly are just right on, those would be right along the Sacramento River, correct? South of Freeport?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Property owners, possible eminent domain. You can imagine impacts on the recreation economy locally. It's frankly pretty stunning. So the governor's proposed budget currently is drafted to eliminate the Department of Boating and Waterways, another negative for us, and part of our advocacy to fight against that. I know, and I think many of you will agree, that Lucia Becerra, as acting director and current advocate for us, has been very approachable, very accessible, very connected with the value of DBW's mission and what they need to be doing, and she's come down and served. And the proposal is to put the Department of Boating and Waterways under the State Park and Rec Department, which is nice in concept, but we would lose DBW in a level of bureaucracy, I think, possibly unprecedented. In addition, Department of Boating and Waterways is independently funded, primarily through boater tax and registration. So where is that revenue going to go if it's taken in under another department? We don't like it. We're advocating against it. In addition, Governor Brown has not appointed a director of Department of Boating and Waterways. Again, Lucia Becerra is acting director. He's been our governor now almost a year and a half and not made a permanent appointment. And it's one of many. He hasn't done many, but we don't have consistent leadership. We have good leadership, but not consistent. So the impacts are at all levels on our Delta in our community. Another bad alternative that's come up from Representative Devin Nunes in out of Visalia is what's known as H.R. 1837, House Resolution 1837. It would scrap. It's actually so bad Senator Feinstein has come out against it. So that gives you any indication of how bad this thing is, but it's really bad. It's actually so bad it's worse than BDCP, and I dare say that publicly because I don't want people to think we like BDCP. But it's so bad, and it's most impact to us at the local level is it would scrap the X2 preservation line, the salinity line out between Pittsburgh and Antioch that is so important to us to keeping the Delta freshwater estuary and not a saltwater marsh. The good news is it doesn't seem to be going very far fast. The bad news is it could come back in some reformulated language, so we're watching it very cautiously and closely, but any rule of advocacy and affirmation you can provide that H.R. 1837 is bad and it just needs to go away is helpful. So again, we know that Delta's in a decline. We recognize that at the local level. We know we need some help and it needs some help and support, but sticking a giant sucking straw into the heart of the Delta and collapsing it isn't going to help us at all, and it certainly is not going to help the state on a statewide water management plan in the long term or possibly in the short term. At this point, it's headed down a path of litigation, which we say we'd rather not do, is sue. But if you're not going to listen to us at the local level, you're not going to engage with us, you're not going to have us represented, then that may be our final and ultimate alternative. But we're working hard, and your involvement is very much appreciated and valued. There are no comprehensive analyses occurring in many different alternatives, and equally important is there's no thorough cost-benefit analysis. They're talking about a 15,000 cubic foot per second project, the maximum project capacity, but they're not doing a thorough cost-benefit analysis to tell you what it's going to cost you as a ratepayer, you as a consumer, or you as a beneficiary. And I say beneficiary with quotes because the water exporters consider everybody that pulls water out of the Delta a beneficiary. So they're on this plan to get BDCP to pass, and then we'll come back to us to pay the bill. Remember in the beginning I said as long as they can pay the bill, they can build the project? Well, who's going to be paying the bill? And their vision of who pays that bill is a lot bigger than you would expect ours to be. We did just get back from a visit to Washington, D.C. And again, our coalition is strong and we're working hard, but we need it to continue to grow. And the messaging is important, and your community and your leadership within the community is very important. I know members of the Yacht Club are very engaged, and I know many of you are very engaged, but it's an ongoing battle. It's a decades-old battle. And unfortunately, we're probably going to be fighting for decades more because there is no comprehension to what they're planning. There's no levee protection, there's no drought protection, there's no water storage component. It's simply a water grab, and they're going to look at all of us to pay for it. Lastly, we have a couple meetings that are coming up we want to make sure you're aware of in case you have ability to participate. One is a request from Lucia Becerra, again, acting director of the Department of Boating and Waterways. They will have a hearing at the Little Hoover Commission on April 23rd, and we can get more information to you, but they're looking for folks to testify regarding the Delta and the Department of Boating and Waterways. And secondly, the Delta Conservancy is hosting a meeting, a strategic plan meeting on April 14th from 10 to 12 p.m. in Oakley at their City Council Chambers. Good local event, and your participation is certainly sought for that. So you see here, this is what we know and love and why we enjoy our community so much and the Delta so much. It is at risk, and we're working hard to preserve and protect our interests in the Deltas, and we appreciate your involvement as well. And here's my contact information if you need it. I think you all know how to find me by now. But with that, Mr. President, I would seek any questions you may have or any information I can take back.
Anybody has any questions?
No.
I'd just like to state thank you for your work on this Delta. We need it.
Thank you, Ray.
And also just to thank you for the comprehensive presentation. Keep us informed of all that's going on. We hear bits and pieces, but it's nice to have it in one package. So thank you very much for the presentation, Murray.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again for all your encouragement and the efforts made to protect what we have here. So nice to see you. Thank you.
Thank you. You've heard the saying, it takes a village. Well, we're all part of that village, and we all need to work on it, too. And Mr. Howard and Mr. Steele, this will conclude not only the Delta presentation, but the supervisor's report by bringing forth those two meetings. We really don't have anything more for you tonight, unless you have any other questions.
I was just going to mention that we will go ahead and post that presentation to our website tomorrow, so it will be available for anybody to view more close up, if you will.
Thank you all.
All right, thank you.
Yes, we have one more presentation this evening. I believe that President Steele, let me back up, at the State of the Town dinner back in January, Supervisor Pipo presented a proclamation to the town to provide that, or to eventually get that proclamation to former director David Pipo. And so since David Pipo is here this evening, we thought it would be a good opportunity and a good time to make that presentation. So Director Steele is going to make the presentation to former Director Pipo.
Well, David, we meet at the front of the room here tonight, and I just want to, on behalf of myself and the board, and on behalf of the supervisors for our Contra Costa County, I'd like to give you this proclamation tonight. There's a lot of whereas and what is, but I just want to thank you for all your great contribution and insight and support and the goals of the community to flourish. And tonight's a night for you, and I know these great proclamations are true. So keep up the good work, and we definitely want to wish you a great journey ahead.
Well, thank you, Chris. And actually, I'd say the same back to you and the rest of the board. Keep up the good work. Very flattered and very honored. And to steal a line from my father-in-law is, you know, this is a great honor and got to ride the wave, but it's you folks that provided the wave. And I was just lucky enough to be in the spot to be there early on when we, myself, Virgil, some of the directors up here, had been around to get this thing started, and quite an accomplishment for us over the years. So again, I want to thank you for that, and mainly I want to thank you because after serving for 14 years and seeing so many people get these, and where they bored everyone with all the whereases, Chris was smart enough not to read them all. So thank you very much.
At this time, area agency reports and presentations, please. Sheriff, please.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
As promised, I have 2 months of stats. Pass them out up here, and then I'll get the remainder to the audience once they come out. I'm going to keep it short and sweet because I know you got a lot of important business to take care of tonight. Starting with the February stats, going back a little bit. And it's hard to see once they come around, you'll see what I'm talking about. Two things that jumped out on page two when they come around. There are several crimes which most consider violent crimes, batteries. Felony battery, assault with deadly weapon, disturbing the peace, things like that. I've had some questions about that. While it appears as though it's a whole bunch of violent crime trend, for better or worse, they're all family related, shall we say, so it doesn't pose any real threat to the community at large. So I want to reassure everybody when you look at the page two as they come around on the February stats, we don't have a violent crime wave. It's unfortunate, but it's mostly domestic and family-related issues. So that's maybe an awesome, I guess, in the same. The other thing I wanted to point out, which actually jumps to the next month's stats at the same time. On page one, 5 suspicious circumstance calls, which you heard me at the other meetings over and over again saying, call, call, call. When you see something that's out of the ordinary, please call us, because that's how we know that something's not right. You know your community better than we do, even better than the resident deputies. You know they're here all the time. You live here, you work here, you play here, you know the communities, you know when something is out of the ordinary. So I'm pleased to see all these suspicious circumstance calls. One thing I would add to it when you're looking at things that are suspicious, a lot of these calls have to do with either a car that someone doesn't recognize or a person somebody doesn't recognize. I'd ask that you expand your mental definition of suspicious to things that you recognize but are still out of the ordinary. Meaning, if you see people in your neighborhood that you maybe know are Discovery Bay residents, but you don't normally see them in your neighborhood, or if you see that juvenile that you know isn't old enough to drive, but he's hanging out near a car, you know, those sorts of things, give us a call on that. And I'll tell you why that's important in jumping to the next month, the March stats. Again, a lot of suspicious circumstance, which is good. There were a lot of, on page two again, burglaries, petty thefts, things like that. Somebody who was looking out their window late at night saw a car, saw somebody suspicious standing near the car, called us. Deputy Hamblin was in the back of the room, about a minute away, less than a minute if I remember correctly, and call came out. We were able to stop the person, identify the person, find the person in possession of stolen property. from the car that the woman had just seen looking out the window. So we were able to take that person into custody. Detectives are working it to see if there are more cases. The person, based on their criminal history, seems to be a rather prolific thief, so I would suspect that more of these cases are going to be closed as a result. And it was through the diligence of the community calling and saying, that doesn't look right, and your resident deputies being, you know, close enough, which was nice, because as you know, if the resident deputies are on and it's the beat deputy could be out in Byron, you know, could be over in Bethel Island covering somebody, and then it's a 15, 20 minute drive back. But because you have resident deputies here, he was right around the corner, made the stop, one in custody, recovered the stolen property, probably gonna be able to close more cases behind it. So we're very pleased, pleased with that. Again, the only other point I just want to emphasize, and I'll open up the questions and get off here, is that suspicious stuff. Please, please, please call us. That's what we want. That's what we need. We need people letting us know this doesn't belong. Come check it out. And that's very important to us. And, you know, if it's not suspicious, we'll thank the person for their time, send them on their way. But if it is, at the very least, we can identify, even if they're not breaking the law, we can identify who this person is. So if the next day or next week we identify some crimes, we can go backward and say, you know what, we had that guy, didn't look a little odd, didn't seem like he belonged, and then we can start to put two and two together. I always remind people that's back in, I guess, New York, that's how they caught the Son of Sam back in the day, is parking tickets. Yeah, they went and reviewed parking tickets, and he got a parking ticket on one of the nights he was out killing people. So you never know when those little things are going to come back later. So please call a suspicious activity. That's what I'm glad to see that's coming up on the stats, and we want to see it keep rising. And one last thing for our since it's Discovery Bay, boating and waterways type stuff. The Marine Patrol units are doing more, they've been out getting ready for the boating season to kick in. You may have seen them out on the waterways. They're doing a lot of what we call public assembly checks, hitting all of the local harbors, getting them, you know, squared away as to what the rules are for boats coming in and out, wake zones, just re-educating everybody. Also, they're working on getting rid of some of the derelict vessels to help clear out the waterways before the boating season gets here. So for any of you who may go fishing at this time of year and you see the guys out there, they're working hard to get everything ready for boating season in another month or two. So I have my resident deputies here in case there are any specific questions about things that I didn't address. But yes, Supervisor.
On the no-tow zones posting the no-tow zone area, you guys are out there much more than I am. It's the bathroom, I'm trying to help with it. But if those need to be replaced, or there needs to be some level of maintenance on that, I can make sure you're communicating with us on that so we're on top of it.
Sure.
I've seen them go customer some signs and bumper stickers and stuff.
I know we've worked around the Discovery Bay Shopping Center area, and we've been working with them on fixing a lot of their signs for no trespassing, parking, all of that. Have you guys noticed any problems with signs elsewhere?
Yeah, on the waterways. Right, so.
I'll check with Marine Patrol then. I just thought maybe they might have heard sometimes people come up and share information even though we're on the land, but I'll check with Marine Patrol on that. Yes, ma'am.
It really grabs you when you see your street under residential burglary. So I have a question.
Okay.
On
which
page
month are you
two, and it's 3-6.
Six, okay.
And it's sealed away. Was that a daylight burglary, an evening burglary, or can you tell?
Do you remember? The vast majority of residential burglaries happen during the daytime. It's not like the old days where you fix a rip cap burglar going in while you're sleeping. People know that. People work, they go to school, their homes are more than likely vacant during the daytime. So that's the vast majority of our residential burglaries occur at night. And the auto burglaries happen at night when people are sleeping. So residential burglaries are the day, car burglaries at night.
Yes, that one, it occurred, the best we can narrow it down on that was sometime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Unfortunately, that's the closest we can narrow that particular one down.
That kind of goes back to the suspicious circumstances. The way they gain access to the houses is sometimes they'll call a neighbor, but they'll knock on doors, they'll pretend that they're soliciting. And if nobody gets an answer from a door, they kind of start assuming that nobody's home. They might come back the following day and do the same thing, but if they don't get an answer 2 days in a row, then they'll know that person's more likely working during the daytime or things like that. So that's where if you see the suspicious circumstances, the people out soliciting or things like that. You call us in, we go and identify them. At least if they are legitimate solicitors, they don't have the proper licenses, we can inform them of what they need to do, and we can ask them to leave the area. But if they're, you know, doing something they're not supposed to be doing, then we can at least identify them and hopefully tie something in.
And also with, it'll be for the April stats, but we had a slight increase in some of the property crimes during spring break. And again, it's an ongoing thing. The kids are out of school. We try to monitor them, but there are too many of them all over the place. So again, it goes back to the suspicious circumstance situation. If you see the kids are wandering through the neighborhood, there's not a park at the end of the street, none of them live on the street, call us. If nothing else, we'll just say, guys, come on, you don't need to be on the street, go to the park, you know, get off the street. But at least we know who's there and we can identify why they're there, hopefully. Maybe it's legit, and that's fine, but if not, then we can at least let them know that we're keeping them on. So, any questions?
I have one question.
Oh. Yes, sir.
Minors drinking and doing drugs. I don't care if it's made one. I live in the state of Midwest. There's an issue. They're not afraid of the sheriff. Because the sheriff's been out there several times and told them. Our security, they're more afraid of because I guess the reports to the sheriff's department. But if you're not, I'm a firm believer that if they're doing something wrong, something else is going to be done wrong in the future. So if you don't take them to juvenile or to the police department, then what actions are you taking?
I'll let you know, we can't take it to juvenile hall. The hall won't accept them. It has to be violent felony before the hall will take them. So you're talking murder, rape, assault with a deadly weapon. Those are the only things that the hall will take. They won't even touch minors in possession of alcohol drinking. As far as our department, it's just little old Delta Station over in Oakley. We don't have a holding cell. There's nothing we can do with them in that regard. What we can do is start issuing juvenile probation citations. And what that does is it forces the juvenile, and then depending on which boxes we check, the parents too, to go into court and stand before a judge and answer questions about, you know, why is your juvenile drinking in possession of alcohol. Then it's up to the courts what they decide to do, whether it's probation, a slap on the wrist, a fine, you know, it's up to that point. So we can start issuing those, and that's, it's a good first step. It may not solve the problem to the degree, at least not initially, that you're talking about, because it's just a piece of paper.
I understand.
But it could build into something. So yeah. We could certainly start there, and
we need to have a track record.
And start there.
If it's going to, you know, it's going to get worse than some of them are not in school. Even those half of mine is really sure.
Well, so. On a positive note, we are taking some stride. I'm going to refer to Deputy Londano here, even though, again, it's the April stats, which will be the next month. It's worth presenting, obviously without names, because they're juveniles, but about the arrest you just made yesterday, day before? The last week, yes.
The pedestrian stop. So basically, the pedestrian stopped last week, in the Bay Area. Two 18-year-olds, a 16-year-old, on contacting them, I asked them if they had anything legal on them. Of course not, you're probably searching again. No problem. Okay, first one on the right, turn around, we start running. Caught him, incident to that. He asked him why he was running. Why were you scared? And proceeded to find marijuana packages for sale as well as ecstasy. His statement was it's for personal use. Since you're 18, you're going to take a look at that account.
So I know it's not the answer, it's a baby step, but you know we'll continue with that sort of approach and contact the kids and hopefully identify the ones that are up to no good. And then if it's serious enough, that's obviously an 18-year-old, so that's,
right.
As I call it, the kids who go to big boy jail and not juvenile hall. But with the kids, we'll keep issuing juvenile probation sites, and that'll at least get them into the system and start a paper trail on them. Again, it's not perfect. I wish the hall could take them, but they haven't taken them.
Unfortunately, one of the biggest problems I've found with the juveniles is the lack of concern from the parents. Because basically, all we're going to do is cite them out to the parents. And when I call the parents, it's almost like they're not surprised. They know that these things are happening. So it's more of a parental problem. I know it's a crime.
Right.
But it's a crime that can be taken care of at the parental level versus, because, again, I'm just going to side by the same parents who've allowed this same activity to occur. So it's something that the parents need to get more involved in versus, hopefully, versus us. And unfortunately, we can't compel the children, the parents, to get more involved. I mean, there's no reason why I should be driving down the street at 2:00 in the morning and see, 13, 14, 15-year-olds run down the street. There's no reason why. Me as a parent, I know where my kids are. When I call these people's parents, I'll just send them home or whatever. So we need to get the parents involved prior to us getting involved.
Yeah, but after a while, the parents are going to send them to kids.
Yeah, unfortunately, the consequences don't get serious until they turn 18. And then there's more than we can do. But until that point, I mean, there's really very little we
just,
can do.
Well, you can send them to a court.
And there's no penalty. There's no monetary fines or prison terms or jail terms for juveniles for things like that. They're going to get community service, which, again, turns out to be a minor slap on the wrist, and you'll see juveniles that have the repeated. And so it really does a teachable lesson.
I was, when in the criminal justice studies, people have said that our juvenile justice system was designed for kids stealing apples off apple carts. It's not designed to deal with what's going on today. And unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot of reform going on either. So our hands are kind of tied. Some of the parents who've been through the system once or twice with their kids know, we'll call them in the middle of the night, come get your kid. No, I don't feel like it. Then what do we do? And then we're stuck because, no, you have to come. No, I don't. I'm not coming down. And we got Junior. We can't take him to the hall. Mom and Dad won't come get him. So we have to drive Junior home and say, go inside and I don't want to see you the rest of the night. And unfortunately, the parents know our hands are tied in a lot of cases. So I'm not saying we're not. I don't mean to sound like, oh, we're not going to do anything. We'll do the probation sites. We're going to keep after them, identify them, and again, hopefully get some good arrests if they're up to no good. But I wouldn't want to get anybody's expectations up too high that we can overnight fix the problem. There are a lot of issues, and it's more difficult than that. But we'll certainly try.
I appreciate that.
AJ?
Oh, yes, sir.
Quick thing. As the nights are getting longer and pretty soon the warm weather's going to get warmer, mm-hmm. We're going to find more fisher people coming into Discovery Bay from other locations or even from within town and fishing on the levees behind the condo complex over by the harbor. And I just want to ask everybody to be aware of that, to patrol that as regular as possible and remind the people that are there it's against ordinance to fish from the levee out there. It's post... behind the Harbor Bay Condo Association there. It's posted, and I've worked for 4 years, I've tried to get the yacht that's owned by the marina to put new signs up because they're so rusted you can hardly read them. But I don't believe it has to be posted. If it's against an ordinance, against an ordinance, then it doesn't really matter if there's a sign there or not, does it?
You're talking about the Blue Top condos?
Yes.
From my understanding, that's all private property. From my understanding.
The levees are... But there's no fishing allowed from the levee back there.
Okay.
What happens is people come back there, and it's just like having somebody drive into your backyard, turn on the radio, and start fishing from behind your house. It's there are signs posted at every one of those Ys that says, and it has an ordinance number on it. So if we could just see if maybe we could.
Sure. I'll pull the ordinance out, and if it's as long as the signs are legible.
Might be a problem, but we're working on that.
Yeah, and I've got to check, the trespassing ordinances are very clear, just to give an example, that there have to be signs, certain size, certain font, certain color, certain distances at certain locations. If they're not there, it's not a trespassing. And I have to make sure the ordinance is worded in such a way, if it requires certain signage that way, then it might be a problem. If it's not, if it just says posted in some legible manner, and I can stand there and read it, then that's good enough. So I'll have to check what it says.
Thank you.
We can certainly look into that. Mm-hmm.
Question?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Speaking of ordinances, is there like an email address or somewhere that you can maybe write in nuisances, or do you have to call the sheriff's department, or is there a local neighborhood ordinance complaint department? Like, for items such as like giant pod containers being stored on the street. I mean, that's public storage on, or private storage on public right-of-ways. Incessantly barking dogs at 1 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, just out there in the yard barking constantly, consistently.
You have hit several different things all at the same time. For starting with going backward first, the barking dogs. Animal control is the one that handles that. I refer people, although the sheriff has the authority to deal with all of those things, we're not necessarily the best agency in all cases, and I'll tell you why. Barking dog. We hear a barking, or you call in a barking dog, we arrive, it's not barking. We can't do it, we're done. That's all we can do. We didn't hear it, we didn't see it, there's nothing we can do. Not that we don't believe you, but the law is what it is. Animal control shows up. You explain what's happened, a neighbor says, yeah, the dog's barking. Animal control can issue a citation right on the spot without having to see anything. Or at the very least, they can start a paper trail. So they're the better agency for that. As far as the pods and things on the street, again, if it's a safety hazard, meaning it's creating a blind intersection by virtue of its position, that's something that we can come out and deal with, or the CHP can deal with it too, because it's a traffic matter. If it's something that's just... it's just there, and it's not supposed to be, but it's not particularly a hazard. Code enforcement's the one that does that, and that is through, I know Supervisor will correct me.
Building inspection.
Thank you.
Is the building person here or in touch with us? I tried the emails from Contra Costa before in their code violation form. They keep me back saying that this area is not their jurisdiction and to call somebody else.
Mm-hmm. They lied.
This is their jurisdiction. So that's that part of it. What were your other example? Your first example, I apologize.
Those are the ones I have at this moment. Everything else, the
other one, nuisance. That's the other one you brought up. If it's something where your neighbor nuisance, that's something that is us, and you can call us. Just call Sheriff's Dispatch. They can come out and deal with it. Or there's CopLogic, which is an online reporting system, and you go to the county website and click on sheriff, and it'll get you there. It's called CopLogic. You can basically file a police report yourself online, and nuisance, I know for a fact, is one of the choices of sections to use. And you can file a report. It comes to us. It'll be routed to Delta Station, which is us, and my sergeant will read it. And then if it's something we can do via telephone, we'll handle it. If it's something where we need a deputy to contact you or to handle it, it'll be handed to the deputy and followed up that way.
And then, do you want to give out the non-emergency number?
Oh, I apologize. Yes, for dispatch, area code 925-646-2441 is Sheriff's Dispatch non-emergency. Goes to the same dispatch center as if you dialed 911. The only difference between the two is 911 pops up with all your personal information, your phone number, in case you can't speak for yourself. Calling the other number, the dispatcher is going to ask you what's your name, where you live, all that sort of stuff. But otherwise, go to the same place, same response. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got more time than we should have, but... Anything else?
No, it's covered.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
The California Highway Patrol, please.
Fire department. You guys threw me for a loop tonight. Fire department usually trumps me every time coming in here, but
they did. Tonight. They did it to him on purpose tonight.
Oh, nice. Because you have to run out and then came back.
I need you in the field.
Anyway. Welcome to our hello from the Highway Patrol. We don't have our standard stat sheet for tonight, but what I can tell you that relates back to last month was that we have had our senior volunteers out. You might have seen them actually today. They were out, and they've been out a couple other times doing those spot surveys for us to determine, in part, some complaints that we've been getting about speed in specific areas. They come out, and they were doing 100 vehicle spot surveys for us. So they come out roughly around the time that they said the complaint was. They measure the speed of 100 vehicles at random, and then they document it and bring it back to us. In some cases, they're fairly good complaints, and they need some attention, and in some other cases, maybe not so good. And like I spoke last week, my partner and I, who are specifically assigned to complaint problems, have a regular rotation coming out here. And we joked last time that maybe some people were going to figure that out. And whether they figured it out or not, I don't know. But the compliance is amazing. And I noticed specifically, because I'm out here and I pay attention to that, they must know the days were coming, or they're just getting better across the board. So we're going to switch it up and see if we can find a different day and maybe some other folks. But nevertheless, we were out today. 25 sites between the two of us for everything. This month specifically is Distracted Driver Month. I don't know if you guys have heard of any of it in the media or anything of that nature. That doesn't just mean a cell phone ticket or texting or what have you. somebody's driving down the road eating a cheeseburger and they can't stay within their lane, that's a distracted driver. And we're going to cite them for basically not being able to maintain their traffic lane. It doesn't make any difference. They could be drinking their coffee in the morning and reading the paper and driving, which we see all the time. All those things are distracted drivers. So it doesn't just mean a cell phone ticket. However, that will be the majority of them. Oddly enough, when I was coming here tonight, I pulled on a clipper from Newport, and I was behind a gentleman in El Camino, and he was over on the shoulder, and I assumed I was riding my motorcycle. I assumed he moved over so I could go by, which is very common. And as I go by, he just looks at me. Keeps on driving, like, he doesn't even realize what he's doing, or maybe he doesn't recognize. I don't know. But I would have expected the phone just blows up against the windshield and, you know, I'm caught. Don't, just oblivious. No, just driving through my own neighborhood. And I mean, fortunately for him, he didn't get stopped. I was coming here, and I was already a little bit late. So, but nevertheless, you guys might see a little bit harder presence. Our two other officers that are assigned out here daily, you know, you'll see them every day of the week. And then you might see a few more of us on a sporadic day throughout the week, every week of the month. So if there's not anything else or any questions,
So is the regulation, even if you have the hands-free device through your speaker system, if you're holding it in your hand, that's the violation?
Yeah, technically. And the law reads, I know what it says because I've read it and because I've been to court lots of times and people fight it, and it says that you are allowed to dial and you're allowed to answer that call. We're in a bad position that we don't know and we can't tell, and we have so many people that would say, I was just dialing. Well, in fact, they were texting their best friend that they're, you know, going to meet at Starbucks in 10 minutes. I don't know. But I'm not put in a position to be able to have that trial right there on the side of the road. So I have to cite if I feel confident in it, and they take it to court, and then they explain. The problem is, I know our judge, our commissioner specifically out here, will ask everybody this question. Was the phone in your hand? Yeah. The law requires you to be hands-free. He doesn't want to get into the semantics about dialing, not dialing, whatever. As far as he's concerned, you're distracted, that phone's in your hand, it's supposed to be hands-free. So per the letter of the law, I'm a firm believer that that's okay. That's how it's written. That's what we have to, you know, that's what we have to use to determine whether it's a good site or not. The judges, on the other hand, the spirit of the law is something that they're looking at on this issue, and that is, you're distracted at that point, he's going to find you guilty. So I know it's kind of a muddled answer for you, but you're going to take that risk. If you're driving with it in your hand, you're going to take that risk.
Any information regarding the Discovery Bay Boulevard entrance, the detour that car made and broke a fire hydrant?
No. Matter of fact, this is the first I've heard of it. So, right. But I can certainly find out some information.
Yeah, I thought SHP was on the same.
Took the wrong driveway. That's all.
Yeah, it just wasn't me. So, right. But I'll find out some information for you guys next month.
At the steakhouse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And well, any questions, guys? All right. All right, well, thank you very much. Have a safe ride. Fire district, please.
Can we put it off any longer?
With East Contra Costa Fire. I'm here to give the monthly incident report for East Contra Costa Fire. 32 medical calls for the month of March, one structure fire, which I'll go back to, one vehicle fire, no vegetation fires, although we are quickly going to be drying out the vegetation, so if you have any around your home, now is the time to clear it out. Three auto accidents, no boat accidents, it's still a little cold. Four fire alarms, one public service, one hazardous condition, one smoke investigation, one odor investigation, and one illegal burn. The one structure fire was on Anchorage. It was an attic fire well-involved attic fire on a shake roof. The crews did a really good job containing that fire to the house of origin, containing it to the house of origin, and preventing the spread on a windy night, which is always the main concern in Discovery Bay and any community. Anybody have any questions?
On the structure fire, had 59 been out on either a medical or supporting Brentwood in their area or Knightson, how long do you think would that house have response to? Because, you know, we have 57 and 58 closed now, and typically I believe your department would leave an engine or two behind and send one to, I'll call it mutual aid, I'm not sure the terminology, but to assist the other ones. But 59 right now could have been out on another call. Do you know how long do you think it would take to?
Well, let me back up. Your fire protection district is not, there's no one fire station that is a standalone entity. If you get any large incident, whether that's an automobile accident due to the high speeds out here or a working structure fire, it's going to take a minimum of 5 engine companies. Your 5 engine companies come as far away from possibly Antioch or Bethel Island. So it is, you just can't think about your own fire station. You have to think about it as a global perspective. So if any more of our fire stations shut down, or we don't bring up the staffing in the 2 fire stations that we have shut down, if your one fire station, Station 59, which is in Discovery Bay Common, is on a medical, you would be getting engines from Brentwood, the 2 engines from Brentwood, Oakley, and Antioch. And possibly even sunshine from the
fire station. It's taking a long time to get to their tank.
15 to 25 minutes. Wow. So on a windy day, even if the house next to you, or your house, which is next to the house on fire, even if you don't necessarily have a shake roof, a fire on a windy day will blow flaming embers up underneath the eaves, in through the attic vents, in through the attic gables. We've been there, we've done that. Once you get the fire working in the attic, we might be able to save your contents, but unfortunately, it doesn't matter how quickly you get people there. Once you've got a working attic fire, you're going to burn that attic off. You're going to burn that roof down to the top sill, and it's quite dangerous.
Chief Burris, I asked Chief Hughes about that at the exactly what Virgil asked at the ECCFPD meeting on Monday. The first engine arrived just about 7.5 minutes in. To answer your question, Virgil, the second engine showed up about 12 minutes. So that would be the answer to that question. And the last engine, I think there was a 4-alarm on that, was 17 minutes. So it was from 7.5 to about 17 minutes it took for 4 engines to get there. And then I think Antioch came in and backed him up on the other side of town.
The first engine was engine 59, which is in quarters.
So 12 minutes to if engine 59 wouldn't have been there.
So 12 to 15 minutes is kind of what I go, depending on what they're doing. That's pretty common.
Jeff, I think my concern, and you know my history, would be in other, nothing against East County Fire, but in other municipalities, there's a move-up immediately. So that the city or community is never uncovered. And what we're dealing with, what we're going to be dealing with, is no coverage.
Yeah.
And that's the concern.
Yeah. Yes. I don't think I'm allowed to go into I'm standing on my tongue here, but there's a something interesting that's going to be coming up in June. I highly recommend everybody make it to their local voting booth. I think I'm allowed to say that.
And pay attention.
And pay attention. Yeah, we've already shut down 2 fire stations because of the budget constraints within our fire district, which is a fire district. It's not one thing, one station. So, and as all of you are pretty aware, it's not just the structure fires, it's the automobile accidents, we do get hazard material incidents, boating accidents. This end of the county leads the rest of the county in trauma. We use more medical helicopters than everybody else in the county combined, including Richmond.
Any questions or comments from the public?
Now that I've scared everybody.
All right, thank you, Chief.
Oh, one last thing. Everybody who's been having fires in the fireplaces all winter long, when you take those ashes, please put them in a metal bucket. Don't put them right in the garbage can. They can still be hot several months later, and all of you little do-it-yourself at home, you're getting ready to re-teak oil the deck or linseed oil the deck. When you get done with all those rags, please do not ball them up in a paper bag and store them in the garage or put them in the garbage bag. Take that same metal bucket, fill it up with water, and soak those rags, those sponges, and those paint brushes in that water. You will burn your house down. Thank you.
Supervisor report? I guess that was
sure.
Out of order, I'm sorry. Well, thank you tonight. Let's go on to our consent calendar. Actually, anybody here from transplant?
No? We have another meeting.
County planning? Code enforcement?
Yes, I attended the code enforcement meeting last Thursday, I believe it was, at Supervisor Pipa's office. The code enforcement staff is going to be looking at with the boating season coming upon us, they're going to be paying a little bit more attention to the issue of trailers and boats illegally parked in driveways and in yards and exposed in violation of the ordinances. And one of the other things that I've encouraged them to look at are some of the signs that are out there that are relative to some of the developer signs that advertise homes for sale when there's nothing for sale. And there haven't been for sale for a couple of years, and some of the signs are in disrepair. So they're working on those issues, and that's about it on code enforcement.
No reports for special districts. Let's see here. All right, let's move on to the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Let's move on to new business. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of public and attendance. First item for you this evening is a professional services contract with Veolia Water to provide the supervisory control and data acquisition, otherwise known as SCADA related work, associated with the biosolids and dewatering construction project. This work effort is the culmination of all the efforts that have gone into place so far. Once the project is complete, they will all be tied in to have a system that's completely interoperable with the rest of the system. The amount of the contract is budgeted. One thing I'd like to mention is that Veolia has a very highly industry regarded group in this field. And we did talk to other vendors on this, and we decided that it was best to continue to work with Veolia, since they would continue to be our vendor out there working on a day to day. And so there was some seamless benefits to that. And if you have some questions regarding some of the specifics, Virgil Caney is here to address any questions you may have. Any questions, board?
Yeah. Any public comment, please?
Do you know what SCADA package you're using?
We're using RSD32. And just a heads up on our biosolids. We never put SCADA back in there 6 years ago. So this is to help. We've got a fiber run that we're putting in. And this is for the PLCs, program control logics, and then various programming to make that work. And we have to buy a lot of those components. That's what some of the cost is, as well as with the programming.
Can I ask why you use an Allen Bradley route, the Rockwell route?
Because most of our products are Allen Bradley.
Currently?
Okay. All right. For all commenters, and if we could come to the podium, it'd just be helpful because I can't hear all that way back there. Let's not engage in a dialogue. It's okay to ask a question or make a comment, but no, expect the dialogue. Any further public comments? Okay.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve this contract for $76,638.61 to be on your water.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The next item for you this evening is a agency comment request from Contra Costa County, a land use permit application from Verizon Cellular and Pfaffenhofen, I believe is the property owner. I apologize if I butchered that name. Essentially, it is a modification to an existing cellular antenna at the located at Bixler and Orwood Road. I understand in talking to the representative from Verizon that it is to help improve their 4G network in this area. Ooh. So it is just adding to the network and to the structures that already exist in place. And see if the board has any input on that.
I haven't seen 4G since it came out.
I have no comment.
No comment.
That'd be the improvement for the service out here. So any comment from the public?
I just have one question.
Can you come to the podium, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that the tower that looks like trees?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
They all look like trees.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
No, it's no motion. No action.
So,
no comment.
As we've done in the past, would the board want me to send a letter to the county indicating that they have no negative comment?
No negative comment.
Yeah. I'll make a motion that we advise staff to send a letter to county to indicate we have no problem with this project.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Unanimous?
Thank you. The next item is a well 5A water quality and proposed testing program. Late last year and early into this year, Ludorf and Scamanini, our district engineers on our water side of the house, conducted a study of all five of our wells and provided us with a report back on March the 5th. That report is attached to tonight's agenda package as well. That report indicated that well 5A has elevated electrical conductivity and total dissolved solids. Essentially, it has a much higher salt content than the rest of the wells. And as such, Ludorf and Scamanini has proposed, along with the district's and Veolia's help and assistance, an additional water quality and testing report, and that report was sent to me at my direction on March 27th, sorry. And so what Ludorf and Scamanini is proposing is to conduct a study of well 5. It's identified on page 2 of the report. Review that water quality data, conduct regular tests daily. I believe it is 3 times daily, Virgil?
Yes.
3 times daily. And compare that information to well 4, which comes off the same approximate depth within the same aquifer, to make sure that the data that they collected when they did the initial study is accurate. They believe that it is. The testing that's been taking place subsequent to that is showing high levels of salt at this point in time. And as such, they are recommending that we conduct this series of studies and tests. And if you have more specific questions, Virgil is available to answer any questions that you or the public may have.
Question. A public comment? No comment.
I'll make a motion that we approve this contract with our consultants.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Do directors have any reports or comments?
I do.
Go ahead.
I just want to, as I indicated earlier, I did go to the ECC FPE meeting. On Monday, And the primary topic of conversation was, of course, the proposed parcel tax and some of the information that's being disseminated about that. Is that, for clarification purposes, this is not just a Band-Aid on an existing situation. It's actually a viable 10-year plan to fund the fire district for the next 10 years. It expires in 10 years because it was necessary, it was felt that it was necessary to put a sunset clause in it, so it would not be an everlasting tax. At that point, who knows where the economy is going to be, who knows what development input there will be into the fire district and what our home values will be, because remember, we're trapped by Prop 13. So I just want to say that they're doing the best job they can of educating. They've had three meetings out here in Discovery Bay. The first one was fairly well attended. The second one was very poorly attended. And the third was at the chamber last Tuesday. And I believe I wasn't able to be there, but from what I heard, it was well presented. There was a lot of great questions that came out of the business owners who attended the event, and they seemed to be rather positive about it. Again, I'm not in any way recommending a vote, but I would recommend you really look into it and look into what your insurance costs might be if, in fact, you weren't going to have, if we were down to three engines to cover the entire East Contra Costa District, which is what the option is if the parcel tax doesn't pass. So that's the report that I have to give tonight, and I will get that written report in by the end of the night.
Thank you.
Because it's in my car.
I just wanted to recognize the Discover Bay Elementary School and Timberporn Elementary School. They've earned the California Distinguished School recognition, and I congratulate the educators and the parents and students of those schools on that tonight. So, I don't have anything else to report. Staff?
Just two things. One, I think you're aware that the biosolids project is well underway. If you haven't been down there or driven by it, you're missing big pieces of tractors and equipment and scrapers and graders. So they're moving along quite nicely. I'd also just like to remind the board and the public of our Earth Day celebration coming up. And that's all I have this evening.
All right. Please come to the podium.
Hey, Rick, if you don't mind, Chairman Steele, you asked about the auto accident the other night.
Right.
We did have a youngster who apparently, I guess, assumed he can probably get to the steakhouse faster by taking the first. He took out a little baby palm tree and a fire hydrant, and he got turtled in the fire hydrant, so he couldn't move thereafter. So we responded and turned off the water, and we waited for a tow truck to lift him off, and we were able to pull the fire hydrant from underneath his vehicle off, and he's able to take off. There was hardly any damage. It was a Jeep Cherokee. I assume when he got home, I'm sure his dad probably got after him.
They had car insurance?
I don't know. It's private property. The steakhouse is, so I believe it is. Two CHP officers were there. They did take information, and they did relay that to Dr. Mike.
Who's responsible for the fire hydrant?
They are.
They are.
Okay. All we are responsible. Just shut it off. Just an FYI. When the fire hydrant gets hit like that, it is probably pumping roughly about 1,500 to 1,700 gallons a minute. So by the time he hits it, by the time we get out there to shut it off, you've got at least a good hour, roughly, thereabout. Just that.
We bill them for the water?
We do. We already have the bill ready.
Was there any arrest? Did you notice somebody go to jail?
No, the young kid, and God, for my age, I'm sorry, but he looked like he was probably 19, 20 years old in my eyes, but I don't know all the details. I kind of stay away from that. He didn't get arrested, so he obviously didn't have alcohol.
Or something, okay.
So.
All right, thanks for the clarification.
The underside of his car.
Yeah, that was right down. All right. District Legal Counsel report, please.
Thank you, President Steele, board members. As you will recall, in February, on February 6th, Director Dawson resigned his position on this board effective that date. At the February 15th board meeting, I went over the options that are available to the district for filling that vacancy. One is by appointment. The second is to have it filled by election. The election option would not occur until the November regular election. The third option is to do nothing and allow the Board of Supervisors to appoint somebody in the event you fail to take any action by within 60 days of the resignation date. In this case, the 60 days expires this week on April 6th. At your meeting, first meeting in March, you had received applications, 11, I believe, of people who were interested in appointment, and at that meeting you voted to move forward with the appointment procedure, which required the posting of a notice 15 days before today's meeting date, in which you announced to the community you were going to appoint somebody tonight. So procedurally, you have complied with all the posting requirements. You now have the option. You will need 3 votes in order to appoint someone. Again, if you are unable to appoint someone or do not take any action to select the election option for November, then effective April 7th, the responsibility for filling the vacancy will rest with the Board of Supervisors. Finally, I am unfamiliar with each of the applicants, but just to remind you that in order to serve as a member of the Board of Directors, the person needs to be an adult, need to be a United States citizen, and a registered voter within this district. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Council, just for clarification, does a nomination need a second in this case?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. That's all I have.
A good question also. I think you've already answered this before. In the event that we are unable to appoint somebody tonight, can we then choose to go to the nomination process in November? Election process in November.
Your agenda has board vacancy appointment. However, you could call a special meeting, which requires 24-hour notice, for tomorrow night, in which you would then take that action to select the election option as in order to, in essence, thwart the County Board of Supervisors from filling the vacancy.
Excellent. Any more questions? As president of the town of Discovery Bay, I am glad to see there is interest in the community. We have got a large and diverse community, well over 13,000 people, and the 11 people that showed interest, while I don't know all of you personally, I do appreciate your interest and volunteerism. And there are a lot of, as I've been up here and working with the CSD, there are a lot of opportunities to serve our community, whether it's locally here at the board level, that we also have committees on this town, and we also, the supervisor's office is continuously looking for people that want to give input and help make this place a greater place to be. So I would encourage, regardless of the outcome tonight, I would encourage all of you to continue returning, and I look forward to meeting you in person. I know the rest of the board members do as well. So, you know, get more involved. It's definitely important. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to the final comments from the community, public. Any?
I got one question. My question is to the legal counsel in regards to the 24-hour notice. I believe that would take effect tomorrow due to the public notification. Then it would constitute 24 hours after the public notification, correct?
It's 24 hours after the posting of the notice. So, for example, if the notice was posted at 11 p.m. tonight,
okay,
the meeting could happen at 11 o'clock tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, I just was on the understanding that it was during business hours, but okay, thank you.
Any more comments from the public, applicants? All right, seeing no more comment, I'm going to open it up to our board here to discuss and the main out.
Okay, I'd like to. Okay. Again, yeah, I would like to thank everyone that applied and showed interest. It's really a lot of people. The fact that you came in and said you wanted to serve is you know, a good point right there. It says you want to serve your community. And I would echo what President Steele said. There's certainly other opportunities if you're not selected tonight. But thank you all for your interest. And I'd like to comment on nominate Bruce Hall, and I would like to give you some reasons why. We have lots of people that all have good skills that they bring. This town at this point is on the cusp of having some really big issues come up. A lot to do with financial issues and budgetary issues. We're looking at possibly having to go out and get a bond. We're going to have to get some money because we have some real capital issues we have to deal with. And Mr. Hall has the skill sets and the experience that deal directly with those. He has been a banker. He's been worked in the municipal sector and actually worked with some districts. This kind of opportunity, not in this state, but on the financing issue. And having sitting through one of the meetings that we talked about the lingo of this process that we may have to go through, it's the whole district has to learn. I mean, a general manager hasn't done that thing in its completion, so it's a on-the-job training. And to have someone here on the board that had relevant experience, I believe, brings a large group skill set that we could use in this board. So I would like to place Mr. Hall's name and nomination.
I would second it, but I would also like to make a comment. I too would like to thank for all of you that came forward and brought an application, came to our meeting. I think you should be commended. A lot of people have come to this town and told all that they would do if they had the opportunity, and not one of them showed up, and not one of them put in a resume. So for those of you who did come in, thank you very much. I know I speak for everybody sitting there. What I would like to see happen here tonight, I don't want this to become a popularity contest. I don't want it to become what this board has been in the past, which is the Good Old Boys Network, and it's in bring a friend on. We have an obligation to the residents of this community to bring the most qualified person onto this board. And I think I've read every resume several times. And I think based on the financial issues that are going to come up in the next year, that are coming up right now and in the next couple of years, bringing somebody on with a skill set to handle those issues, somebody who can step in, who has the same qualifications or more than the directors that are already sitting here, is the right thing to do. And as much as I would like to say, let's take the most popular person and bring them up because it'll be terrific, I believe that we should bring the most qualified. And that is the reason I'm seconding the nomination of Bruce Hall. Thank you.
Excuse me, I have a point of order. Do we continue to make nominations, or do we vote on them as they come up?
You have a motion on the floor. Your Rosenberg's rules of order require you to dispose of the motion before you move on to new motions. No, you're past public comment.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Aye.
Nay. I would like to make a nomination. I would like to nominate Jim Madison for the position, and let me echo the sentiments of my board here. I'm the last one to speak, so it's going to be redundant, so I won't go too much into it. But I do commend everybody that has come up to do a very difficult job. It's not as easy as my colleagues make it look, and so I would just commend everybody's involvement. I would like to nominate Jim Madison for a number of reasons. First of it is he has already exhibited a desire to be an active member of the board, in that he has already been on a committee here. He was an active member of the Community Center Committee, volunteered to do that, and from what I understand from the people that were on the committee, contributed and made a lot of special efforts and individual efforts to go visit other areas, and gave the time and energy that it takes to hold this position. I also received a half a dozen recommendation letters from other people in the community that are leaders of different organizations, from the Lions Club to Rec 800, to recommending Jim Madison as somebody that works well in the confines of a board, and also has the knowledge and ability to do the job. I would nominate Jim Madison for the position.
I'll second that also, and I think that Jim brings a fresh look to the board here. I think that Jim's got a lot of great skills in project management and leadership, and I think that Jim will help make the community a stronger and more vibrant community and be the place where we live and play in Discovery Bay. I think the property values and the landscaping and the parks, as well as our infrastructure, do require a lot of prioritization and planning. But we've already got a very clear roadmap ahead, and I think that somebody that's had been here a long time will be able to give us input on that, and that person's Jim Madison. At this time, I'd like to request a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You got to call for the rest of the vote?
All those opposed?
I'm going to abstain from this vote.
No.
One no.
Okay, one no, one abstain. Legal.
Here's for me a curveball. Give me a moment, please.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So if we need some more appointment here, you guys, or some more deliberation, I'd be happy to bring it up. But you know, if we can't act right here, the four of us, then it just reminds me more that we really do need to have that fifth seat filled here. So we're going to go through it again here in a second.
May I ask for a 5-minute recess so I can pull up my system?
All right. Recess.
Nice banner there, staff. You have a blank wall at your house now?
All right, I'd like to call the meeting back into order. If we could turn it over to council, please.
Thank you, President and board members, for your patience reviewing your bylaws, Section 2, specifically pursuant to Government Code Section 61225, the affirmative vote of 3 members of the board are required for action to be taken. There is no rule that you have established dealing with abstentions. Abstention is not an affirmative vote. Thus, as the vote stands, the vote of 2 in favor, 1 opposed, and 1 abstain would not, in my opinion, be a majority vote. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
What that means is the motion fails because it didn't get 3 affirmative votes.
So what are our choices at this point?
Your options are to move on to a third applicant. If, you know, obviously you can talk amongst yourself and have discussion. In the event you want to revisit one of the applicants, that would technically be a motion for reconsideration under Rosenberg's Rules of Order. A person making the motion for reconsideration would have to be someone who was on the, in essence, winning side of the motion. In this case, it would have to be somebody who voted in opposition to the person who reconsideration is being requested. So, I'm happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Any comments? Questions, Mayor?
Do you have any comments?
I will after you. Okay. I would just remind what the legal counsel's given us a choice here, and we're a little crossroads. I would say that, again, our constituents and our community here has asked us to serve them and to be representative of them, and I would just ask that the abstaining and the nay for Jim Madison would just reconsider. I think it's very important that we are able to function as a board and keep our decisions local. I do not although I understand the county's role and the supervisor's role in this, I would prefer that we could work this out tonight and not have a default of not doing anything. So I'd ask you to reconsider on that.
Okay, I can't speak for the abstain vote. I won't reconsider it, and I didn't abstain because I don't want. I liked you. I abstained because I told you I abstained. That puts four Lions Club members as board members on this board, and I'm considering resigning from Lions Club because I believe the majority of the board is Lions Club now. That's the only reason that I abstained.
Just out of curiosity, how is that relevant to this board?
It's not a matter of whether it's relevant. It's my belief.
Okay, I just asking.
I believe that having one group have a total representation and control of the board is wrong. It's a conflict to me. This is my opinion.
Okay.
Had you felt the same way, I wouldn't be asking you that question. You're allowed to abstain with that. I have nothing against you.
I
like you.
Oh, I'm not disputing your... I'm sorry, Director Zimmer. I'm not disputing your... I thought... I didn't see a reason, and I want to know what your reason was, because maybe I'd see your point, but I don't, so...
Okay. That's my reason.
Okay. Here's the deal. I like Jim. I've served with the Lions, and my vote was nothing against you personally. Okay. You did serve on our community center. I was the chair. So, because I don't want to send it back to the Board of Supervisors, I will. What I nominate Jim?
Make a motion.
I'd make a motion to reconsider and nominate Jim.
All those in favor?
Second. I'll second that.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
I'm standing again.
Okay, let the vote show Ray Tatro, Chris Steele, Kevin Graves, affirmative, Mr. Mark Simon, abstain. At this time, I'll turn back over to council.
You now have your vote. Procedurally, the appointee will need to take the oath. That can be done with the board secretary, who's a notary public. Quorum is here. If you want to act now or after the meeting or have the individual come in tomorrow, as long as it's done on or before the close of this Friday.
Why don't we just do it right now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right, let's take care of business right now and wait this action on it.
Mr. Madison, join me up here at the podium, please. You would raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Jim Madison, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
I'll defend and support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance. To this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation. Or purpose of evasion. And that I will faithfully discharge. The duties which I'm about to enter. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Faithfully four times.
Welcome aboard. Look forward to working with you.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Sit down and face the dragon.
She'll catch you. Next to Miss Carol.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd like to take care of it now, so he's officially sworn in.
Yeah.
We'll do
it after the meeting. Then he's technically
not sworn in.
You didn't have
the... Let's get the notary completed.
I gotta get you notary completed, or I can go sit down.
Just
have
him sign it
now. Yeah. Okay. It's a little slow on the uptake.
Give it to the other secretary. I don't have all of my notary's tools. They're all at home.
Do you want to... Oh. Can't do it anyway.
Should I run home?
Come in tomorrow and do it.
I'm sorry.
Get out of here.
He just can't.
I'm resigning.
That was
already.
It. That was it. That's it. Must be that seat.
No, just stand there. No. Jim, stay in the seat. We're not going to be voting with you tonight.
Okay.
All right. So we've got a plan, and we're going to execute. Okay. So, Jim, welcome aboard, and we'll call you director when you finally get the notary done. Okay. Let's see here. Any committee updates? I'm not aware of any committee action right now.
The only committee items I would like to remind the board that we do have the notice out for people that are interested in our budget review committee. So maybe some of the applicants for this evening's nomination process might be interested in submitting their interest for that position as well. And that action will be before the board at the next meeting on April the 18th.
So again, we're going to have upcoming budget committees formed, and those will be meetings that are very important for the public to get involved with. All right. Any correspondence from supervisor regarding county's parking ordinance and March 5th? We had one public records request for board vacancy from Mr. Brian Dawson. And any future agenda items, board and staff? Any public comment on future agenda items? No. All right. So I don't have any future agenda item. At this time, I'd like to adjourn our meeting tonight. Thank you.